When the long straggle of inmates left their blazing prison behind and tore out, many of them barefoot, across the stubbled fields, their spirits soared with an optimism they hadn't known in years. The stunned disbelief they had initially felt had given way to a guarded giddiness that seeped down to their feet and kept them moving at a spry clip. To watch Cabanatuan consumed by fire was unimaginably cathartic for them. "I turned back toward camp once more to see flames leaping skyward," Dr. Hibbs wrote. "For the first time, I was finally convinced that we were honest to God going to make it." 100 yards out, the escaping prisoners were met by the radiant countenance of Henry Musi. The colonel had spent the opening moments of the raid crouched in the rice fields, carefully watching the fireworks go off. Now he rose up and made his considerable presence felt. Musi projected just the sort of steady confidence and air of authority that the skittish prisoners needed as they emerged into the world. He came across as his usual stentorian self, offering bright words of praise and encouragement, taking the more tentative prisoners by the hand, doubling back again and again to greet each fresh wave of the newly freed inmates. Unaware that Captain Fisher had been hit by a mortar shell fragment, Musi was unequivocally ecstatic about the raid. "Everything went off exactly as we planned," he said, "by luck and by the grace of God." Musi was thrilled by the generosity and game spirit he saw in his rangers. "Some of them gave their shoes and most of their clothes to the prisoners who needed them," the colonel later fondly recalled. "They gave the prisoners cigarettes and held them up when they needed it. I cannot say too much for them." Yet as they made their way over the rice fields, the faltering chatter of gunfire in and around the compound was soon engulfed by another, even more terrifying ruckus. Less than a mile to the northeast, at the Kabu River Bridge, an enormous firefight had erupted between Captain Pahota's men and the Japanese troops camped along the Kabu. As they hopped and limped due north toward Platero, the prisoners could hear the deafening roar and see the riverbed coruscating with gunfire and explosions. Stray Japanese slugs streaked across the field and riddled the dirt around them. As one ranger recalled, "Those bullets were singing a pretty tune over our heads." The prisoners and rangers zigzagged their way across the paddies to avoid getting hit. For a half hour, the ungainly procession of the halt and the blind worked its way north. As they plodded along, Musi kept darting nervous glances off to the right, where the fighting at the Kabu Bridge continued to rage with undiminished ferocity. The Imperial Army soldiers were still obviously trying to break through and come after them. Musi couldn't quite make out what was happening over there. Pahota appeared to be putting up a good fight, but it remained to be seen whether he could hold long enough for all the prisoners to cross over to the other side of the Pampanga. Finally, Musi led the men down to the banks of the river, where he rejoiced to learn that Pahota's lieutenants had made good on their promise. In the bright moonlight, Musi could clearly see a dozen Carabao carts parked down in the riverbed, the great yoked beasts stamping along the muddy margins. They were unlikely Karens, encrusted in slop, reeking of various wet, musky odors, their massive horns bobbing in the darkness. Their presence was a testament of local loyalty to Pahota as well as to the Americans. A peasant of Nueva Ecija didn't lightly offer up his Carabao, the bulwark of his livelihood, to anyone. Pahota's men had to fan out in all directions, locating animals and wagons from faraway villages. Yet as remarkable as this fleet of beasts of burden was to behold, the colonel could already see that a dozen carts weren't enough. The condition of the prisoners was much worse than he had expected. Before the night was through, Pahota's minions would have to return to the countryside and scare up a few dozen more of these quixotic conveyances. To some, the Pampanga was both a literal and a metaphorical line of demarcation. Crossing it was to cross over into freedom, for many prisoners doubted that the Japanese would elect to give further chase beyond the river. One POW thought the train of prisoners approaching the banks of the Pampanga looked like the Hebrews of Exodus, waiting for the Red Sea to part before Pharaoh's warriors arrived in hot pursuit. The most incapacitated prisoners were brought over to the ox carts and placed inside the straw-lined beds, five to a wagon. Using pliable cane poles, the drivers, who in most cases were the actual owners, prodded their animals across the river. One of the ox carts tipped over into the water, and a group of men had to struggle to right it. Although it was swift, the river was shallow enough so that the water came up only to the axles of the wagon wheels. With maddening slowness, but without a hint of physical strain, the carabao tugged their cargo across the channel, the creaky wagons heaving behind them.